Ready?
All right, Ms. Horst, I know we have our consultant here today, so why don't you go ahead and get us started?
Thank you. We appreciate the opportunity to present our findings. We do have Mike Walker with us today representing our consultants. We, of course, have Chief Williams and Chief Gentry with us as well. We're starting with fire, correct?
Whichever one you would like to start with.
All of you have had the data from the consultants for a couple of months and have now had my short response and the department's response with regard to the findings that have been presented. You've had that for your review for a month or so. And with regard to fire, you have basically a consolidated recommendation from both the chief and I as to those things that we agree with. I would say we're 99% agreement on the proposals before you, and we're prepared to discuss any or all of the items that as you would like.
Well, I guess why don't we have our consultant come up here and do a presentation for us, since we paid him $138,000 or $118,000 to present it and go through it.
Yeah, I think he, I'm not sure he came prepared to present because he presented his findings previously, but he's just here to answer questions or.
Okay, you want to go ahead and come up to the podium? We'll just go through this page by page if you want to do that.
Sure. You know, as you know, I guess as we said it when we made the formal presentation to council, we got great cooperation from both police and fire departments, you know, when we did this work. And you know, this is a you know, difficult process to go through, and so it was as compared to some other studies that we've done, it was a pleasure to work with the people in the department, and they gave us all the information that we needed. And if you'd like, I can just kind of walk through the document and
sure.
Go through the highlights.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of thought that's why you were here. I mean, at first you weren't even going to be here, but I had asked for you to be here since it's your presentation, it's your study. I, you know, kind of thought that you were going to be here to present it. So, I mean, basically the only reason you're even here is because I asked you to be here.
Right. The original proposal calls for him to do the study and said that once it was done, it belonged to the city.
Right.
And we could take it or move it in that direction. Perhaps I misunderstood, but I understood you wanted him here for reference and for answering questions. But
yeah, I mean,
I'm sure he's capable of going through the findings. If,
Okay.
Real quick, can I ask a question? How did you get this job?
We responded to an RFP that the city submitted, and we were selected based on the proposal that we prepared.
Exactly. With all due respect, Mr. President, this isn't this man's study. The city asked this man to show up, and he did it, and so he's reporting. This is not just coming by, walking on the sidewalk. Hey, I think I could be your fire department, police department. So hopefully we can get some legitimate questions answered out of this.
Okay.
I studied, you know, in preparation for this meeting.
Sure.
So I'll be able to answer your questions.
Well, we can handle it however you would like. If council members have questions, they can just ask the questions, or if you want to give a presentation, whatever you would like to do.
Doesn't matter to me, because I don't like to study.
Question and answers.
Okay. You want to go ahead and get started, Mr. Priester? You want to do that, or Councilman Owen, whatever?
Well, what do you sure, think? I'll start.
Okay.
How you doing, sir?
I'm fine, thank you.
Your study was pretty thorough. It hit on a few subjects that were of concern for the local community and the taxpayers that we have. Such examples, let's take Station 3 and Station 4 to combine a rescue fire combat truck instead of having two down to one. Is that pretty well the way you report?
We suggest that you had two alternatives. One, you could, you know, the choices you have are all policy decisions about how much risk
you want to
accept. But based on our analysis, there are kind of two options. One, you could take out a rescue and a pumper from Station 3 or 4, or you take out a rescue from Station 3 or a rescue from Station 4. Obviously, with the latter alternative, you have, you know, more capacity. And,
right.
And the way we did our analysis is we looked at where you have overlapping coverage, you know, where you could get the resources you needed to the scene of an emergency and have duplicate, you know, duplicate capacity. And essentially, what our recommendations are, and again, this is an efficiency study, and efficiency studies look at, you know, how you use your resources and can you get more value for the resources that you fund. You know, what we found is in those areas, you had duplicate capacity, and by eliminating the duplicate capacity, you would still be able to get the full complement of staff that you needed to handle a structure fire, a major incident in the area served by those stations, with fewer resources. Essentially, we're saying you have duplicate capacity that you don't need. You get rid of the duplication, and you can save money without compromising the quality of the service.
Did y'all do a demographic study on the distance between every station versus the community and the populace?
We did two sorts of analysis. The first was a travel time analysis.
Right.
Okay.
Response time.
So that's answering the first question. The second thing we looked at is what was the volume of activity. You know, you can have a station that's right next door, but it doesn't help you if the resources at that station aren't available when you need them. So we did two sets of analyses. The first was, we said, do you have enough capacity to get where you need to get the resources to the scene of an incident quickly to meet the standards of NFPA 1710. And then we also looked and said, okay, what's the likelihood that those resources won't be available? And so we said, in this instance, you had duplicate coverage in terms of response, you know, in terms of the travel time, but you also had more resources than you needed to ensure that a high probability that you could get all the resources that you need to handle structure fire within time based on the volumes of calls that were received.
That culminated time, if I remember reading the study, there was what, over a period of 3 years for the response times for either station?
Yeah, I think we used one, the most recent year's worth of data for the volume calls, thinking that that's the most recent information. The city has changed, the demographics of the city has changed, the city grows. So using the most recent information.
As well as with the fact that Station 4, we're in question of Station 4, is also our primary station, that is one that is a primary responder to the airport?
We consider those things. Again, that's why we gave you the option.
Right.
You know, and it's a question of you know, one, both options we think are sound. One is a little more risk-averse than the other.
I understand your findings. In all due respect, sir, the west side where Martin Luther King is, Station 3 has come under question and scrutiny before about being relocated with growth, and it's been shot down in the years past. It needs to be there. It needs the accompaniment of the fire rescue, the pumpers. We have residential homes in that neighborhood that are older homes that in a short amount of time, the response time being critical, would be something that would definitely be in question for the citizens, taxpayers, if we relieved them of a rescue or a pumper truck that could respond to that area in time. And being that Station 4 is so-called able to complement that neighborhood, if 4 was to try to make it back over to Martin Luther, where 3 is, for any structure fire, or there to 200 downside 301, there would probably be a very good chance we could have loss of life and total loss of structures, being that the response time would be that much greater. Now, that's something I don't think y'all really picked up on in regards to the actual locale. I know your suggestions, your alternatives, they look good on paper, but for the citizens of Ocala, I have to kind of say, no, we have to go back to the table of this and review it and look at another angle. We have I spoke last week about Station 3, for example. We got a truck that's sitting over there right now, a combat truck. It attacks the fires. That truck's a 2001. That truck's just about outlived itself. It's 500-gallon capacity. It was made over at E1. The rest of the trucks throughout all these stations that we have right now have 1,000-gallon capacity. That's our responsibility to see that we have a suitable truck for the neighborhood. But being that that truck is still here today, and that we had a structure fire at any time within the time limit that we need to have that truck replaced or considered to be replaced, then we got a real problem. Because this truck here has been plagued with a lot of issues, a lot of warranty problems. It was through warranty expiration that we ended up being stuck with it. And it's had continual rework on it. No concerns for you, but just to lay it out for the citizens of that side of town, for the community which we try to provide the utmost service is fire, rescue, structure, whatever it may be for those neighborhoods. It's under great scrutiny that we make that decision to relieve either or station, in my feelings, of rescue or a combat truck, attack truck, because we have growth on the west side of the college, which is where Station 4 is. It's continually growing. Once the economy gets back stable, gets back on its feet, there's going to be quite a bit more development over there. So even at that, we're going to have more impact for them with their response time as well, and it's going to be critical to keep a station manned for both. Not to overlook the fact that the airport's going to have to eventually be accompanied, being that we've got our tower up and we have the approval there with FAA, fixing to be up and running here before long from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. for tower control operators to be operating out of air traffic. It's not going to be something down the road we're going to have to overlook. We're going to have some kind of a station or a fire truck, which Station 4 right now at this time carries and houses the fire truck that can respond to an aircraft fire, and they're specialized for just that. And the truck will possibly have to be reconsidered to be set up out at the airport at some hangar in given time. Once this growth comes in and we do start getting our air traffic the way they're looking to, which is going to be a shot in the arm. So that should be of consideration too. So we're going to have to look at that and review that enough to where we can make a good decision that's going to be viable for all the citizens here that we're talking about. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Yeah. Ms. Rich, you don't like this study? You voted for it, but you don't like it? On what basis?
I voted for it before it was done.
On what basis?
There are a lot of issues in here that I don't like. And
is it this man's fault?
He did the study. It's not his fault.
Okay.
But he did the study. He compiled all this stuff and gave it to us.
Where did he get the information?
I don't know. I guess from the department.
He got it from the fire department and he got it from the police department. This meeting today, and we can end this meeting real quick from the way it seems to be going. If we don't like it, we want to sit here and jump on this man, and we're going to sit here and question whether or not he gets. This was a response today between the city manager, Chief Gentry, and Chief Williams in response to this man's findings that he got the information at the police department and he got it at the fire department. So to sit here and somehow in some sort of set this mood that we don't like what this man's telling us, this is a response. Chief Gentry ought to be at that podium telling us about Station 3, whether we need it or whether we not need it. This individual put the meetings together. And right there's the man that decides whether or not ultimately they're going to do it. As the city manager sat there and said that he met with Chief and he met with the Chief. And now today this meeting is about our response to what this man is. So if we want to sit here today and take this and beat this man up for his information, we're in this meeting right now and let's go back to getting to work and do other things.
Daniel, you're double talking.
I'm not double talking.
You're saying, who called him up here for questions and answers? We're not supposed to say what we think about the study? We don't have to agree. I don't get paid mega bucks to agree with everything somebody brings up, puts up here for us. There are a lot of things in here I don't agree with.
I agree.
And right there's the man that ought to be saying.
Well, I didn't ask him.
Right there's
to come.
The man. Right
I didn't
there's
ask
the man.
Him to come.
He's the one. If a fire right now happens, right there's the man responsible for it. Not me
I
and
know
you.
It, but I know there
and
are.
If
a lot
he needs
of
Station 3
it,
or Station 2
like
or Station 6 or every single station, it's his call. So here we did. We compiled a study, an efficiency study. Efficiency.
Just 1 minute. Let me ask. Chief, would you come up here? you suggest that we close Station 3 or 4?
No, ma'am. In my response...
Okay, that's all I wanted to know. Thank you.
Right.
And I concur with this assessment.
That's what this meeting's about.
Well, okay.
That's what this meeting's about.
That's right. So Chief didn't say that. He didn't suggest to him that we close Stations 3 or 4.
That's, again, Ms. Rich, that's why we're here today. We're here to listen. We're here to listen.
Tell us what to say.
I'm not telling you what to say. I'm just sitting
here.
We're wasting everybody's time. We just sit here and listen to Mr. Priester grill this guy about why he suggested we close Station 3. That's not what we're here today for. We're here to listen to the chief. We're here to listen to two people's response to an efficiency study. Chief Williams, Chief Gentry.
Okay, well, Mr., you can have a seat and let Chief Gentry explain his...
Well, before you do that, I mean, you can go ahead and sit down. I'm just going to make a comment. Thank you. I'm the one that asked him to come. He's the gentleman that did the study, and who knows better about the study than the person that did it? I wanted to have him as a reference to ask him questions as we're going through the study. There's nothing wrong with that. We have studies done all the time, and we don't have to agree with them. They're studies. We have the perfect right to disagree with them. We can ask questions. That's our right. That's what we're here for. So I'm not assuming anything. I've read the study. I've got a lot of notations in here, questions and things like that. And I'll ask him. But I thought this gentleman, since he did the study and he knows more about it than probably anyone in the room, thought he'd be here a good reference. So with that said, Chief Gentry, if you'd like to respond. Yes, ma'am.
I just would like to posit, there's a lot of emotions going on.
Yeah, I don't know why.
And it's because, you know, we care a lot about our community. Both of the chiefs care a lot about their departments. And we care a lot about the city, or else we wouldn't be here.
Sure.
And I think the value in the study is that we've got someone who doesn't have all those emotions wrapped up into what's going on here. You know, we've got an outside person, you know, this is what I think. And we can take it for what it's worth. We can throw it in the garbage and go on about our life, or we can say, you know, why is he saying what he's saying?
Right,
you know, yes. Let's take another way to look at
exactly.
it. And so I think if we can all maybe just relax a little bit and hear from the chiefs and see what they say.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
What I'll do is I'll just walk you through my response that I gave to the city manager. First of all, I want to say there were a lot of good suggestions that the study brought out, just for what you pointed out there. But there was areas of disagreement, too, that I had with the study. The areas of agreement, the fitness program, we do need a formalized fitness program. We've had it over the years. It's just one of those things, like everybody goes on a diet and you head off your diet. So that's an area that we do need to improve on, and we're already moving forward in that area. The consistency of management, here again, the study pointed out that we do have some internal issues we need to address, and we've got recommendations on how to do that. One is improving our human resource training, interdepartment cross-training, mentoring program, executive officer leadership program, and classes on the implementation of policies and procedures for the city and for the fire department, so that we get a consistent implementation of our policies. The independent 911 communication center, we're already working with the county trying to put together a regional dispatch center. And I believe that is the future for the county and the city, is the regional center. So that's something, too, that it pointed out that we're working on already.
Chief, could you tell me what you mean when you say regional? Because that would
be
often in here.
You have SO, PD, both fire departments in one comm center with an operational board, an executive board, so that no one entity has ownership of it, that it's there for the entire group. That's where the efficiency is really going to come from.
And let me add to that, that this is a very long-range plan. As we talked with all the groups, it could be, I think we said 2025 is target because of the cost and differences and so forth. But it's, you know, it's not something that's going to happen tomorrow.
But I mean, in the situation you've got now, aren't the calls coming in through the county and they're routing them where they want them to go?
Yes.
Okay. So.
Like City Manager said, this is a discussion that's got to start now for it to happen.
Okay.
10, 15 years that
okay.
way.
All right.
But in the end, the community's going to be better off for that
okay.
discussion. We also agreed with the calculation of the relief factor. What we've done is we've eliminated 3 positions within the fire department through attrition. So we'll leave those positions, and we've also modified our overtime procedures. And with those 2 entities working together there, I believe we'll be able to reduce our overtime budget. And that's a savings of approximately $266,000. And that should be on an annual basis. Our communications battalion chief, through attrition, we have already started that process. We're trying to civilianize the responsibility in that division into our comm center. And that's Chief Bohr's position. Once he retires, Chandra is being trained to take over that position. That's always been a uniform position. We're going to try to transition that to a civilian position.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, ma'am.
Are you going to pay him a civilian less than you pay a firefighter?
Yes, ma'am. That's where the savings come.
For the same job?
Yes, ma'am. Because they're not a certified firefighter. They're not at the rank of the battalion chief. Therefore, that's where the savings come from.
Again, that's it's years down the road.
Right. That's through attrition. You know, Chief Moore retires. I think he just entered the drops. He's talking 5 years from now.
Or if he moves into another position within the department.
Correct. Also, modifying the department structure. You know, the study pointed out that I didn't have direct control over the operations. And there is, I do believe there is some truth to that. So we're looking at how to reorganize the department, and through attrition with the operations chief eliminating that position or modifying that position. And there's, again, that's a savings of approximately $156,000. That's going to happen relatively soon in the next 6 to 8 months. Reinspection fees. There's currently has been a reinspection fee, but it's cumbersome and hard to enforce. So we've got to overhaul that that ordinance. Now, the areas of disagreement. I'm not recommending any removal of any units. I don't think it's a prudent thing to do. Financially, it may look nice, but when you put it into human terms, we're busy. And you take the call volume, Engine 3 ran 2,810 calls last year. Rescue 3 ran 3,212 calls. Engine 4, 2301, and Rescue 4 was 3305. You can take their numbers using their 95% availability. And when you run that out, we're talking human lives that are going to be affected. It's our estimate for option one, you're talking about 70 life-threatening calls that our department will not be able to answer within a timely manner. When you're talking about structure fires, you've got to be there within the first 4 to 5 minutes to get started. After 8 minutes, fire propagation curve takes into effect. We're behind the eight ball. When you talk about medical calls, we've got to be there as soon as you can, 4 to 6 minutes. If it's a cardiac, you start having brain death, you start having muscle death of the heart. So time means everything to the fire department. That's, he may call it redundant or duplication. I don't see it as duplication. I see it as a necessary service that we provide. So I'm not recommending any reduction in the units. The study also recommended reducing the number of combat battalions. These are our battalions that are on the 24-hour shifts. I'm not recommending reducing those either. I see that as a safety issue for both the citizens and for the firefighters. We were able to split the city and provide the type of coverage that we need. And when I say the safety of the firefighters, in that first few initial minutes, we need to have that command and control officer there and have somebody making the right decisions, because if those decisions aren't made in the first few minutes, we're going to have substantially either building loss or loss of lives. And you just cannot do it. If you tried to drive from the east side of town to the west side of town, the city is simply just too big to properly cover that.
How many battalion squads do you have? You were talking about the battalion squad.
There's six of them, two on each ship.
Okay.
Well, we basically split the city east and west.
Okay.
So one covers three stations. One has six, four, and three. Another one has one, two, and five.
Okay.
And they do, it also gives us the ability to handle two incidents, you know, simultaneously.
Going back to you're talking about the duplication, also walk me through. I'm out on the boulevard and I see an accident, you know, I see one the other day. So, boom, it happens. You see fire rescues en route, we're en route, we're on the scene. Ambulance is needed. I know the county obviously is running the ambulance. Now, they have cross trained, correct? The paramedics, EMTs, fire, I mean, they've done all this cross training.
Some of his units are.
Some, yes.
The ones in the city typically are single cert, either paramedics or EMTs.
When I see a accident in the middle of the boulevard and I see a pumper, the rescue, and the ambulance there, how much duplication is on that scene right there?
Duplication on that scene? There is no duplication.
Okay.
on the scene. They all have their functions and their jobs. Let me slip over here to the back page here. Just to give you one of the issues in the study was what you're talking about. You got an ambulance showing up, and you got fire rescue showing up, and you got an engine showing up. Let me just walk you through a cardiac arrest and what everybody's doing. The reason the engine and the rescue go, the rescue is the primary paramedic unit. It's a quick response. It's supposed to get there quicker than the engine. It's easier to maneuver. You've got a paramedic and an EMT on there. They go in, they get started. The engine comes in, and they also have a paramedic on board with two EMTs, or they could be all certified paramedics. The ambulance comes in, they're going to do the transport. But here's some of the things that we've got to do. You've got to get an IV started. You've got chest compressions. You've got to do airway control. You've got to get the EKG, the monitor hooked up. You've got to get patient information. You've got to get the history on the patient. So there's jobs that are going to be, everybody's got their jobs to do. So it's not really duplication. It looks like a lot of equipment, but it's a lot easier to turn that equipment around if we don't need it than it is to call for it later. Like I said earlier, time is essential for the fire department to be there in a timely manner. If it's a cardiac, we've got to be there, and we've got to be performing our job, and we've got to be hitting on all cylinders as fast as we can. Going back to the vehicle accident that Councilman Owen just asked about, there we could you could have a vehicle accident, you've got fuel containment that you've got to take care of, you've got extrication that you've got to take care of. On top of that, medical, patient care. So it's very easy to tie up that five-person crew between that engine and that rescue, just handling a minor vehicle accident. To properly stabilize somebody, you're talking about two people to get in there and immobilize the patient. So there is no real duplication in there. Everybody's got their jobs to do, and manpower, putting the proper manpower on there at the proper time is what we're trying to do. I don't know if that answered.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, while we're on that subject, the only thing I've added is I've asked the chief to review how the medical supplies are accounted for, because we do pay for those medical supplies through our county taxes, and we should be reimbursed completely by the county for any medical supplies we put out. And I've just asked that we have a full accounting procedure be implemented, that we make sure we recoup any and all costs back from the county that
are we not paying twice.
They are, on the most part, pulling off the truck replacements at the time. But I would prefer to have a record of those things so that we can have a full cost accounting at the end of the quarter. And that goes back to our interlocal agreement with the county fire, that we should monitor trips in and out of service areas, and we should, I just want to make sure that the taxpayers of Cal are not being double dipped.
What kind of dollar amount is that?
I don't know. That's a lot of dollars.
Roughly about $50,000 a year is what we budget for medical supplies. Last year we spent around $27,000-$28,000, and we've already started the implementation process of better tracking of this. And in theory, we should be able to get that down to zero. But
but when we've got, and you're saying that the county shows up, the EMS, and they're rummaging through our trucks.
Our guys may have initiated the IVs or whatever, but we're actually paying for that service through our county taxes that we pay as citizens too, and so they should reimburse the full cost of any supplies that we utilize. So,
and have we been? I mean, I'm just curious. Have they? Do we know that they've been reimbursing us, or what's that mechanism?
Well, that's what the chief was referring to. We now have a written mechanism in place, where in the past it was kind of, you owe us this, and they kind of gave it back to us. I wanted the full cost accounting.
We had an agreement, right? But I mean, they're not even paying us for the agreement to provide service within the urban service area outside the city limits.
Yeah, that's
now, is that correct?
Well, what it calls for is we evaluate. We may go in and back them up maybe two times to every one time they come into us, and we're just supposed to true that up at some point. And the evaluation of how often that happens is supposed to happen at least annually, but I think we're trying to do it quarterly now, right, Chief?
Right. What was the agreement that we had when we did I did that with you.
We had two agreements. One was the automatic aid agreement,
right,
which covers the enclaves. And basically that agreement is what they were paying us, reimbursing us for.
But they stopped paying us on that, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
They stopped responding to the enclaves.
Okay.
Unless it's a mutual aid. That's the second agreement.
Right.
We had a mutual aid agreement with them. If they're tied up or if their unit isn't available,
right,
they request us to respond.
Okay.
Instead of us automatically respond.
Okay.
And we track those two for the same reasons,
right,
to make sure, you know.
But we're doing the work, but they're not paying us, though. Is that correct?
Well, it's a mutual aid, but I think the agreement basically says that we'll evaluate the data, and if it gets too lopsided, then we have the right to recoup costs, and that's why we want to keep good records.
Is that what it was?
Correct.
Okay. All right.
But back to the medical issue, I don't want to get confused, because we're talking about a different issue. The medical supplies, we were trying to replace it. If we started an IV on the scene, we should replace that from their truck. Our guys going in and getting the supplies. But a lot of times, again, back to the time, there's not enough time for them to get that supply. So that's where we incur it. You know, or somebody forgets. You know, I mean, it's down to us doing a better job of accounting for those supplies on the scene. That's what we're trying to improve.
From my point of view, because the department was on call, they're on duty, they're being paid, the only real added out-of-pocket expense to the taxpayer was any loss of supplies. And so if we can shore that up, we've eliminated any problems regarded to, are we double-dipping taxpayers' monies, because we're not. They're, you know, they're there, they're on duty, they're on call. And I think this provides us a clear record, not only for now, but future negotiations with the fire department as we have future interlocal agreements.
The next area of disagreement was the public information officer. The study suggested that we basically downgrade that position to a captain level position. If we did that, it's basically going to cost us more money because the contract covers the captain rank. We're going to wind up paying overtime. Currently, Chief Studoff puts in an untold number of hours, so we're getting a better value for him by having him on a salary basis. We've also discussed with the city manager the need for PIO, and in the future, that position may be eliminated through attrition or through reassignment. The fire safety management, the study suggested that we possibly could civilianize some of those positions. I don't think that's the proper position to do that, or the proper way to handle that division. We have talked with the city manager in an effort to more streamline the process of plans, reviews, and inspections. We're going to work closely with the building department and the planning department, and we've already had discussions with that of how to implement that. Okay. Well, that pretty much summarizes my agreement and disagreement with the study. Basically, the areas of agreement resulted in $422,000 annual savings for the city. So, you know, by taking the outside look, we have gotten some value out of the study, and we've been able to do that without affecting our service level to the citizens. So,
let me just emphasize that the 422 won't be immediate. It's over a few years to get there.
Councilwoman Rich.
Chief, did you agree to assigning fire prevention duties to the city planning and development?
No, ma'am. We keep that within the fire department, but work closely with planning.
One thing we're trying to do is provide a one-stop shop, so when developers come in, they can get their data from the fire chief, fire inspectors, as well as the building inspectors, without having to go to different locations. That's all.
And we can accomplish that. They're working closely.
You can accomplish what? You
the one-stop shopping.
Oh, okay. These call responses, like cats in the trees, concerned neighbor calls, and agree to all of that? These concerned neighbor calls, sometimes people in there are deathly ill. Okay.
We respond, basically, to the guests. You know, we're always prepared. We're always ready to go. If somebody's got a cat in the tree, it's more of a public relation issue. We will send somebody out there. It may not be an engine. It could possibly be a battalion chief or one of the training officers will run by there just to talk to the person, because the cat's important to the citizen. You know, and so we try to give them, you know, that level of service. And we don't take units out of service if, for whatever the reason. You know, if they're there, we can respond. They'll be in their district for whatever the call would be. So if somebody calls the fire department, we're going out there to see what we can do for them.
Okay.
Never forget the words of wisdom from the great Mr. Mike Finn. You never find a cat skeleton in a tree.
That's true. And that's what we tell them.
Never found a cat skeleton in a tree.
Calls back in a day or so, the cat's still up there. They're more concerned with say, coming out and trying to help, rather than actually getting the cat out of the tree.
That's the same guy that says computers are a fad.
Okay, Chief?
Chief Williamsville PD, I too will join Chief Gentry and suggesting that the Berkshire Company professional group came in, did a wonderful job, and they were very thorough, and the information they provided is always, we don't believe that we've got the answers to everything. And I'm sure they believe, too, that if we can get brought a different company in here, they come up with some other kinds of things. So being efficient and that sort of thing is kind of fluid. It's always moving. It's always changing. And that's a healthy thing. I think it's good for the citizenry here. During my tenure here with OPD, we have reorganized several times. We've scaled back on a number of issues. We've reduced the budget every year for the past 7 years that I've been here. I like to think efficiently and cost savings wise, we've been able to do that. And we continue to do that. The budget we are now submitting is even less than we did last year. So again, we are looking at every opportunity to be efficient and to save taxpayers' dollars where we can. There are some, do all of you have our response with you? Mm-hmm. I can just generally go through them. To begin with our overall management responsibility with the city and that sort of thing, it's pretty clear. You know, we report to the mayor. And Mr. Forrest came in and he organized his staff the way he felt that he needed to organize the city. Although we don't report to Mr. Horst, we have a fiduciary responsibility, and that is to work together for the betterment of the citizens of the city of Ocala. So we are not separate and apart from the city in that respect. We are a part of the city, and therefore we want to know what's going on. The issue of conflict or what was the term? Strain was the term that was used. I guess Mr. Horst and I don't agree with that. And we have worked out a system where we're in the loop. We know what's going on at the PD. Horst comes over every other week, and we have his phone number. We can call him anytime. We do that when we have questions, particularly the policy issues that are germane to the entire city that we are hearing about, or he's mentioned to us in staff meeting, and if we have questions, we call him. We get those answered. Call the mayor, we get on the same page, and so that we're able to function, I believe, professionally and efficiently in that respect. So I submit that there is no strained relationship between the police department and the city of Ocala through Mr. Horst's office. Regarding communication and management style, it's my responsibility as the chief of the department to keep that going. Being a paramilitary organization, we have that structure within the agency. And too many people are passing out orders, it becomes very conflictual, and it becomes a problem for within the agency. Therefore, as chief, I delegate and discuss with the deputy chief how things should go within the agency, and it flows down in the organization that way. Not to the exclusion of, I do go to roll calls. I walk into every office almost every day in that building, and I talk to everybody from the janitors all the way up to the deputy chief. What's going on? How can I do it? How can we do the job better? Do you have all the resources that you need to get the job done? And how are things going out there in your area of responsibility? So that is a daily operational thing for me. Today, tomorrow, it's Wednesday. That's a day that I have established for myself. Every Wednesday, I'm out in the field. And Ms. Heinbacher is taking the opportunity to ride with me. Mr. Gwynn, you've ridden with me on Wednesdays and that sort of thing. So,
is that something you've been doing all the time, or just since this study?
No, ma'am. I've been doing that for 7 years.
Okay.
And plan to continue to do it. We get out, ride in the neighborhoods, get out and talk to people, and find out what's going on for myself. So when I have staff meetings on Tuesday morning, like this morning, I bring up the staff, those kinds of issues that citizens are telling me firsthand. Or when I go back up an officer on the street, we get to have that one-on-one conversation as to what's happening in your zone that I need to know as the chief of police that we can fix. You experienced something Tuesday night that we jumped on immediately by the time the lady from Golden Holiday, by the time she got home, they were all over the place out there. She came and met with me yesterday, and we further clarified some issues that are happening in that community. So that's the kind of response that, you know, we like to give within from the LPD. If citizens have issues, we like to get on them right away. I beg your pardon?
Pull the mic up a little bit.
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So moving on to the next area, unless there's a question there. About patrol staffing. Well, one of the things we do every year, we take a look at how we're staffed, what's happening, types of calls for service, where it happens, when it's happening. Every Wednesday, we also do what we call crime staff. We bring all the command staff in, guys from the road, the patrolmen out on the street, the sergeants, the lieutenants, set in a room, and we determine where we need to focus our police activities for a particular week. Captains in that district have the authority, if things change after we develop a focus there, to make the adjustment and apply the resources where they're definitely needed. So some areas from time to time experience more problems than others based on, for example, copper thefts. I know you all have heard about all of those. We'll get a rash in them in a particular area, so we dedicate our officers to that. If we have to do stakeouts, if we have to put people in buildings overnight to stop those kinds of things from happening, not to the exclusion of continuing to police the rest of the city. So those are the kinds of decisions that we collectively make as an organization, the patrolman on the street, up to myself sitting in those meetings. So when we come out of those meetings on Wednesday, there's a focus. And Mr. Heinbacher, you experienced that the other day when you have pictures of people, we know who we're looking for, we know what their backgrounds are, we know what their modus operandi are, so we're able to go out and do that. And we now have a different focus on how we approach that, our crime stand. So we adjust our patrols accordingly that way. But also annually, rather than moving people from time, we'll look at the number of calls for service that happens in a particular area. So rather than moving people, we'll move the boundary. And that's how we came to the three districts that we now have. I can go back a little bit. Several years ago when it was first discussed about developing a downtown area. I was new here at the time, and I asked a couple questions of was the police department involved in the study that was done to bring business back downtown. And so the answer I got, well, you know, we could have done it better. So what we did was we established the downtown sector, as you recall. We were downtown for a while, then we moved to the train station. That was in anticipation of what council had set as a goal for the city to make things happen downtown. One of the things I read in the study was people didn't feel safe coming downtown. We responded to that by creating that unit. But as the project did not move along, we were still faced with the opportunity, with the position of having to police this entire area. Meanwhile, while looking at what we were doing, we looked at the numbers of calls for service in that entire city. And what we did was we created a third district and balanced out those numbers. So they're virtually the same, plus or minus several hundreds, and that sort of thing. So we do that every year. Every 2 years, we actually make that adjustment. We look at it every year so that we will see what's going on. And if the trend continues, then that's where we become fluid enough to move the boundaries of the districts, and so the numbers of calls for service for the three districts will be balanced out. We believe that it is more efficient and the best efficient way to do that. Moving on to another section. Oh, lobby staffing. Well, that's something that I'm totally opposed to. The lobby staffing, we believe, is vitally important to our citizens. When they come into that lobby, they expect to see a policeman, to have their issues dealt with. And from time to time, we have to call in additional policemen because of the number of people coming into the lobby. Well, that's something, the cost in doing that would be, is an additional cost that we didn't want the taxpayers to bear, simply because we have policemen in that building all the time. And if the policeman wasn't sitting there at the desk doing what he's doing, he'd be downstairs doing, or in another office behind there. So what better way to have this policeman in the public's building, having him sit in the lobby? We work out a schedule. So what is he doing there? He's writing reports. He's doing studies, because each of the officers have case studies they have to do, particularly for their geographical areas, and operational plans, and all that takes time. So they could either sit downstairs behind and do it, or they can sit in the lobby and pretty much kill two birds with one stone. And that's why we are pretty much opposed to the suggestion of having someone in the lobby. Yes, sir.
What you said that from time to time you have to call another officer up there. I mean, are we getting, you just get situations in there that somebody gets a little fired up, or?
No, sir, the volume of people.
Okay.
That comes in.
But I mean, walk-ins for just whatever, I mean, information or?
That happens. Strangers come to town to see the police station, they come
correct.
In. And sometimes bring the entire family in, and they all have questions about how to get there, how to get someplace
else. What did we do before we had an officer in the lobby?
Before, during the daytime, there was someone there. But after normal work hours, if you recall, the lobby was closed, and there was a telephone on the outside of the building.
Correct.
That someone would come up, walk up, and call in. Someone at the comm center would then call in, an officer from the street would come in. Unfortunately, we had a death at our doorstep. And as you'll recall, that with y'all's permission, we created the lobby staffing duty, and that's how that came about.
And what kind of additional cost do we have on that?
Zero.
You said a few minutes ago, you said cost to the taxpayer.
To add the security guard would be a cost, because we'd have to pay for that. And we didn't feel that we needed to have the taxpayers incur that cost when we've got policemen in the building anyway, writing reports. Right. Developing
the guy, whoever is the man or woman who's scheduled sitting there. So if we walk over to the lobby night, we run into whoever's sitting there behind the desk. I mean, they're scheduled that day to be there, or I mean, you say you're filling it just from the officers that are already in the building. They're just kind of moving their office in a sense up there.
No, sir. There's a block of time that the officers have scheduled,
okay.
And it's primarily the sergeants who have to do evaluations, have to do staff reports, to do studies, and that's all. And they're doing it from right there because there's computers there also. When there's no one in the lobby, they're busy, they're doing things. And when there's business in the lobby, and sometimes a lot of people come in, 15, 20 people at a time, and they all have different issues, rather than have those people standing there waiting and waiting and waiting, we call in additional officers from out of the offices in the back, or if it's something that a road officer needs to come in and do, then they'll come in to do that. They come in again, for example, to get, they've got a ticket for defective equipment. And an officer actually has to visually go out and inspect it to see if it's done. So he has, that officer who was on the desk would have to get up and leave the desk, leaving all those people there, to go out just to look at that. So we'll call in a guy from the street or get somebody from who's sitting there, inspector, can you go out and take care of that? The idea is to keep the public moving and take care of them as quickly and efficiently as we possibly can.
Okay.
I've got to, excuse me.
Yes.
Just going back a little bit. First, with the strain that was reported in the report, and also the morale, I understand you all have a very good working relationship and are very communicative with one another. So I'm wondering, in your opinion, why do you think, like, where is that coming from as far as the report goes? You know, why is that being picked up in the report if you feel like that relationship is not strained?
Well, I think initially that may have come about simply because with the new creation of how Mr. Horst organized his staff, there was a void initially.
Okay.
And
so that was kind of at the time that the study was being done?
Yes.
You feel like
shortly before that got us to that point where people in my agency were feeling that we were not a part of the city and being left out.
Okay.
Because I wasn't allowed to attend the senior staff meeting with the assistant.
Okay.
City managers, but okay. That is not a problem.
But that's not the case.
Matter of fact,
now.
It wasn't a problem then. It's just
okay.
A matter of communicating, and it's just hard feeling. You know, people
right.
And they're sensitive too. They
so,
to
in a sense,
it.
That has already been addressed and dealt with.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I think it was as simple of the fact that the chief didn't work for me, so I felt it very presumptuous to call a meeting and tell the chief he had to attend.
I see.
And early on in that process, but frankly, we began the senior management team probably within 4 or 5 months of my being here, and then the other stuff we started how long ago now, Chief?
A year.
A year?
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead. I'm done.
Okay, Chief. In this report, talks about overall management. It's on page 13 and 14. It talks about, in addition, senior city manager should be assigned as the city's liaison to the police department. And then on page 14, it talks about organization, patrol, staffing, deployment, scheduling, management operations. What are your thoughts on having a city liaison to the police department?
Well, that's in addition to Mr. Horst. For example, he's out of town tomorrow. If something were to come up, it would help if someone else on his staff knew what was going on, the dialogue that had occurred between the two of us.
Right.
And that would help, in my mind, facilitate us being able to continue to do our job efficiently.
Right.
In essence, I took on the role of being liaison, and as I'm out of the office and I appoint one of the assistants to be the acting, they would automatically step into that role. But I think the key was, early on, there was a thought that perhaps the city manager wouldn't have the time to dedicate to it, but I think it's important enough that I do that. So we do meet every 2 weeks, as well as the senior management meetings and phone and otherwise. So I'm in essence doing that, and I am the liaison with the city. Would you agree?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I mean, these things I've just got, you know, written down in my notes here, that seems like that's the mayor's job.
That's probably more policy between the financial.
Right, but I mean, as far as organization, patrol, staffing, deployment, schedule.
Yeah, no, I don't discuss any of that.
Operations. I mean, those are things that obviously the two of you.
Right. Those are not issues that we use
right.
We dialogue on personnel issues and
yeah,
the guidebook
it was just,
and
it was
budget
just the,
issues, those type yeah, of things.
It was just the next paragraphs following that city liaison. Lobby staffing, you've covered that. You've defined what, or somebody defined what regional was. How about the, Parks and Rec, the summer programs?
Yes, sir.
What were your thoughts on that?
Well, we believe that we should continue to do those.
Right.
And as you know, in the past, we've raised money to so that we can take kids from the inner city and from kids from all around the community.
Right.
Participate in those.
Right.
Police and Children Connecting with the program plan you're talking about. I feel that's vital because we're a community policing police department.
Right.
The Ocala Police Department has been awarded that grant longer than any other city in the country, I believe.
Right.
Had it well over 10 years, many years beyond where we were at, where we allowed to keep it.
Right.
So we've got a lot of money in. We've also a demonstration project because other cities come here to see how we do it.
Right.
And we believe establishing that relationship with the children is very, very important
right.
so that our SROs, our school resource officers, and our patrol officers get to meet and know these children as
right.
they grow up.
Right.
And their relationship is, I think, enhanced
right.
by doing that.
Right. I agree. See what else I've got. I think I have two more things. Bear with me. Guess that's it. Anybody else have anything?
If the charter says that the mayor is supposed to oversee the police department, all of these things that they're talking about transferring from police department to the city, do you agree with that? One thing is human resources. Do you think your human resources should be moved from the police department to the city? And there were several other things that they wanted moved from the police department to the city. Do you think that should be done?
Well, what's happening, we're trying to make it cleaner.
Yes or no, Chief? Do you think that should be done? Do you agree with that? Either you do or you don't.
With an explanation.
Well, yes or no first. Then an explanation. Do you agree with, there are several positions that's in the police department that...
No, with an explanation. No, with an explanation.
You don't agree with?
Right, correct.
Okay, all right, now the explanation.
The explanation is that what was perhaps not gathered in that is that, and to make it cleaner, so, because my human resources, the person that does human resources for me does many other things also. And so they wear many hats. To make the function smoother, some of the functions we did 3-4 years ago moved over to human resources. Yet keeping a person in here, and we reduced the size of the number of people that we had doing human resources 4 or 5 years ago, even when Greg was here. None of the functions we moved over, and we were still able to do a lot of things. There are a lot of things that occur between the city and OPD that need to be done. And because my person wears several hats, that's my reason for no. The reason for, I think, having the smooth transition of information flow between the two agencies, departments, is very, very important. Because we can't do anything without them anyway.
It came down to things like, where is the master file kept on personnel? Is it LPD or is it HR? It's going to be HR. That's the record. Scheduling for testing, all those type of things. And, you know, my response is that I support the recommendations as presented by OPD, and just clarify that the HR office would be the official depository of all HR records. They may have a copy as well. And, of course, that excludes any IA, internal affairs type investigations. We're not talking about stuff like that. We're just talking about basic housekeeping type records that we would keep. And we also...
What do we currently do?
Pardon me?
What do we currently do with HR records?
Well, I think there's been, in the past, there's been some over here and some over here, and never had a complete file. And my concern was that if we had a suit or something that came forward and someone requested the file from HR and it was missing something, or from PD and it was missing something, it might get us in the bind. So we've just worked to make sure. The HR person, the body, is still at OPD because they do assume other duties and responsibilities, and is, in essence, the liaison to the HR department. But HR will be the official depository of all those records, so that if someone comes in, we've got one record, one file, and that's the way it ought to be. So we have, I think the way to say it is, we've identified and clarified duties and responsibilities within those lines.
Is that what you agree to? I mean, this is just what he's saying.
We agree to that.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, everything I presented in my proposal, we've agreed to.
All right.
Chief.
Yes, ma'am.
IT, financial support services, facilities and building maintenance, and fleet maintenance. You agree for all that for the city to take over all that, or what?
We still maintain.
You've managed that thus far, but the recommendation is here is that this all should be consolidated with city departments.
Well, can I share with you what we've agreed to do? Well, but that's not what we agreed to.
Okay, this is the recommendation from Mr. Walker. Okay. And that's what I was asking, if he was agreeing on.
Again, no with explanation.
Okay.
And the explanation is, for example, fleet. We still go to the yard to get our vehicles maintained and that sort of thing. As you recall, several years ago, we used to have a mechanic on staff at the police department. But that employee was actually a fleet employee, only assigned to us. Because of budgetary reasons, the body was moved back to the yard. Well, all of our vehicles have to go through the yard for all of them, for the lights, the purchase, and all that stuff goes through them anyway. So the idea was to let them do it, but we still have our body here over the police department. Neil, who is our fleet guy, manages all of our rolling stock, keeps it up to date, keeps it liaisons with the city yard to make sure that all our vehicles are maintained properly and that sort of thing. So the function is over there, but we still have the body in-house doing doing our work. Same thing applies to IT and to fleet, IT...
facilities.
Facilities.
And finance.
You've all been going to pawn shops ever since I can remember.
Yes, ma'am.
To look, because that's a recommendation in here too, but that stuff y'all already been doing.
A lot of stuff we've already been doing.
Okay.
All right, Mr. Horst?
Just to add further, you know, the fleet facilities maintenance, you know, I said I support the recommendations as presented to OPD, but indicated that there's some economies of scale that can be realized when we work with the city's facilities group, which we have a very good group, and recognize that due to the fact that they're open 24/7, they need a presence in the facility, and we're not denying that, but we're saying when there's other efforts needed, such as, you know, mowing contracts, whatever, we should piggyback those on the city's contracts to get as much economies of scale as we can. And that's the type of recommendations we move forward with. Same way with vehicle maintenance, as the chief just recommended, but the thing that is not realized is that the fleet coordinator, or whatever title he has, isn't just fleet. It's also all the other equipment they maintain, whether it be projectors or cameras or test systems or whatever all those things are. If it was just fleet, it wouldn't make a lot of sense, but he does a lot of other duties in addition to that. So what we're trying to do is just carve out those little niches and those little pieces that made sense and send it where it needed to go. The last one I would mention is the 800 megahertz system. That supports all city radios, utilities, public works, parks and rec, PD, and that person through mutual agreement was transferred to telecommunications to support the 800 megahertz system, radio control, and cell phone control citywide. And that's something that's we've done already and part of our agreement. So, you know, I guess what I was trying to say is, you know, perhaps I was wrong, but I thought the purpose of our thing today was for chiefs and the city to present our response to their findings and what we think the recommended solutions are. And based on those things that have been agreed upon by both chiefs, we're looking at the potential of $500,000 a year savings. It may take us a year or two to get there, which will be perpetual at the cost of about $100,000 for a one-time study. So I think the study has been very beneficial. Now, there's other areas that are strictly policy-driven, such as, you know, the equipment at Station 3 and Station 4. And I think you made a very eloquent case for that. Chief made a very eloquent case, you know, to me prior, and that's why I agreed with him, because he is the expert, his men are the expert. I should say his men and women are the expert. So I just wanted to clarify that, you know, efficiencies, it's kind of like about 2 years ago, the internal auditor recommended that certain vehicles shouldn't be taken home, in the PD and particularly, because we can save money and it's not efficient. Well, if that's your only goal, then that makes sense. Let's do it. But the goal is broader than that. It's bigger than that. It was presence and other things in the community, which was a larger objective. And that's what doesn't always get captured in an efficiency study, and that's right. Why the chiefs and you evaluate all these things and bring it to light and make those decisions. I will tell you that for whatever reason, when I got here, there was a lot of, maybe the word was strain, between the city on the whole and the police department on the whole, and I will also add with the electric utility on the whole to some extent. But I would say that all of those situations have improved dramatically over the last 2 years. Would everyone agree with that? You know, have we arrived? Is there not more to do? There's always more to
sure.
do. But, you know, I think we've remedied plenty of those. And we may not get everything that needs to be done in this effort, but just on the areas that our two chiefs have recommended, and with my agreement, it's significant. And helpful, beneficial to our citizens, and there's no reduction in overall services as a part of it. Just being a little smarter.
That's what I want.
Yeah. and again, stepping outside of what we're here today, but you know, I've been up here down yours, Kent. I know you've been a big question of why in God's name does it cost us, you know, $275 for an oil change. You know, here's a great example today of why we're able to go through identifying those situations of, well, wait a minute. If everybody take a deep breath for just 5 minutes and realize we've got duplication, we've got this, we're going on, that's why it's $275 from oil. And so maybe now it's going to be $199 instead of $275 and going through.
But it's been that cheap of 5 years.
Well, that's
the first. We discussed that, and we decided that Fleet should do it 5 years ago.
Well, the AS400 system was the system that Mrs. Miller said was going to give us all those answers as to how much it costs to do an oil change. I probably still couldn't get that answer.
Well, again, going back to the reason we have this study, and with an agreement from Chief Gentry, an agreement from Sam Williams, an agreement from the city manager, this study that some of you don't like, that we spent $138,000, it was useless. We gained $500,000 worth of you know, savings for the taxpayers. I still want to ask Chief a couple questions. Why would a study come back and talk about low morale, one? Number two, why do rank and file patrol officers feel they have quota to meet?
Oh, I don't know where that quota issue came from. I've never established quota.
But you have officers who feel that that's the message. They may not tell you that. Yeah. They probably don't want to tell you that.
And that's one of the
reasons. But that's their pressure that they feel. So how do we, how do you dispel that?
That's one of the reasons I personally go to the roll calls. That's why I go on Wednesdays and when I'm riding through the city, back these guys up. Some will tell me what's going on, others aren't. I would surmise that the officers that feel that way are they are being supervised because they don't do anything. When I'm looking at every week when I go to crime stat and my patrol sergeant is telling me we have 60 to 70, 80 crashes a week in a particular area, there's an expectation on my part for the officers that patrol that area to do traffic enforcement. And that was the order I sent down. We need to do more traffic enforcement. If they interpret that as being a quota, then that is not the message that I sent. Traffic enforcement does not necessarily mean you have to write 10 tickets a day. As far as the morale is concerned, again, it's I don't believe it's every officer or every employee in the department.
Yeah, every organization, regardless, but it's police, fire, or City of Ocala, Pro Poly America, Class 1, it doesn't matter. I mean, there's every organization has, you know, four or five people who are just mad at the world, so.
That's true. And to that end, again, we go to meetings. We've established a committee in-house, begin to address those particular feelings and issues and through training as well.
Answer me, and first let me say, I've never been a cop, don't plan on being a cop, and I commend the police department every day. You put your lives on the line, as do the firefighters. Some things I observe as a guy sitting in the truck driving around town and witnessing. I understand an officer has to get control of a situation. You pull a car over, and it may look like an 80-year-old grandmother, but by God, you don't know, because anything can happen, anything can erupt. I've seen more than my share of traffic stops being conducted in what looked to be, and again, I'm asking you on this, professional's not the word, maybe done in a different manner. I've seen OPD pull over for a tail light, stop an intersection, a major intersection at the red light, in the left lane, conducting a ticket because a brake light's not. Again, I don't know the situation, can't assess the situation, but what kind of training are officers getting to handle those types of situations? When you talk about, we see 7 traffic accidents in a certain intersection. Guys, let's be on the lookout. Let's take care. Let's do this. Let's do that. What kind of communication and training are officers getting in order to be able to do that?
Every year we conduct in-service training, and traffic is one of the issues that we do train on. I would surmise that if an officer does stop a vehicle in an intersection or blocking traffic. It's probably done for a specific reason. After assessing the situation, and the officer could have the vehicle moved to the roadway, out of the roadway where traffic can continue to flow. If those are issues that you're seeing, please let me know at dates and times, and we can find out who the culprit is and provide additional training if necessary.
Yeah, and I, and again, trying to stay out of it, I probably, there has been at least four or five instances I probably could have called, and I just didn't. Just kind of scratch your head, and you wonder why. Again, because you take the flip side of that is, you know, an officer pulls over what may be a routine traffic stop, because we see it all the time on the cop shows, you know, all of a sudden all hell breaks loose at a scene, and you know, you off, you know, God forbid, officer down and all this other kind of stuff. But I would like to see those kind of things, or at least an understanding. I think maybe some of our patrol officers would appreciate it, because I'm just telling you, I've seen a handful of situations where, man, because here's the next thing, is that officer sitting at a major intersection, writing a ticket for a taillight, because this one thing I watched and observed the whole thing, you know, it was a taillight. God forbid somebody who's coming around the corner not paying attention run right over the top of that police officer, and not only is, and again, anytime you hit a pedestrian, you should have been paying attention, but all of a sudden now that citizen is in a world of hurt, and I would challenge you, because I think you've got some issues. I'll be honest with you.
Well, thank you for bringing it to our attention. I'm sure my patrol major will take that under advisement immediately.
And UPS trucks. Sorry? UPS trucks. I saw this witness and pulled over a UPS truck. Now, I know it could have been Timothy McVeigh, but I think they executed him in Oklahoma. That's other little things. I just don't know why we do that. I know there's an issue. 99% of the time, it's probably a guy delivering, you know, doing his UPS delivery stuff. Again, it's an assessment of a situation. Call in the SWAT team, call in the canine, make sure there's no bombs or drugs or anything else. After that, are we really concerned that he's doing 50 down the boulevard versus 40 with the UPS truck? I'm not saying that UPS drivers get this free pass to go run through the mill, but again, it's just an education process and a focus process and sort of a philosophy process that what are our officers seeing? What is it that they think, I got to take care of this situation? I'm just challenging. That's my little run of the mill, driving around town seeing some stuff. So.
Well, thank you. We'll take that on advisement.
Chief.
Yes, sir.
Just kind of touch on what Councilman Owen had mentioned. I know in defensive, I know you've always talked about since the day you got here about traffic, and been a big supporter of making sure that, you know, we regulate traffic and such. But I've ridden with officers myself, and it's not tickets. It's just stops. I've heard them say, I need to get my three stops for my shift, and we'll go to certain places and make those three stops, and, you know, they're done. Of course, they obviously see something, you know, while they're on patrol, they'll do that. But there is, I don't know if it's a quota or whatever, but there is the understanding by the officers that I've ridden with that there's a, you know, three stops quota. I mean, is that correct, incorrect?
Well, you know, I can address it this way. Again,
you don't have to give them a ticket. No. Just stop.
Exactly.
I've seen the officers stop folks, and the person will say, you know, I got an argument with my wife. I'm just out driving around. Sorry, I wasn't paying attention. They'll say, you know, just slow down, have a nice night, you know, and, you know, going about your business, and that's all that happens. No
big
deal.
And from time to time,
that's
we do get issue a warning. That's a stop.
Right. Yeah. It wasn't even that. It was just have a nice night, just slow down. I mean, there's no written warning or anything like that. That's a stop.
That's a stop. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the traffic and for the traffic contacts.
Right.
I want you to make visible in those areas where there's issues of traffic, particularly traffic crashes.
Right.
More specifically, where there are traffic fatalities involving pedestrians, bicyclists, and that sort
sure.
of thing. That absent-minded situation that you just gave us, that would necessitate a stop.
Right.
Doesn't necessarily require a ticket.
Right.
The little lecture,
right.
be more attentive and that sort of thing. Those
right.
kind of things, there's an expectation. My officer's on the street for 12 hours. I expect for them to be able to do something in those 12 hours to have an impact upon those issues that we face. traffic, the safe movement of traffic and people is one of our goals on the police department.
Right.
So I expect every officer and every employee, including myself, to take the appropriate action.
Right. Okay. Well, and Mayor?
It's more along the preventive. When you're out there visible, you're talking to people, you may get somebody doing 50 miles an hour in a 40-mile-an-hour zone. You may prevent an accident down the road if you get them to think a little more. So I think what the chief's really saying, and I encourage us too, is you make contact with the community. You let them know they may or may not earn a ticket depending on what they do. It's the officer's discretion.
Sure.
But we encourage them to interact with the community rather than being distant from the community. So,
right.
Usually, I mean, if there's laws been put in place for a reason, we put laws in place, you know, every other week we put laws in place to protect our citizens. These laws are in place to protect the citizens. And I've been on the other side of phone calls where people complain because we haven't been out there and they want enforcement.
Sure.
And, you know, I prefer us being visible with the chief is encouraging.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, some of our employees, you know, the chief's responsibility to run the department in my position, in my opinion. Yeah, and I believe he does that very well.
I think he does a great job of it.
You know, it's encouraging our officers to go out and make those contact with the individual. You know,
right.
if the person, like I said, earns a ticket, they earn a ticket. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we want to save lives. We want to prevent, you know, crime as much as possible. And so being out there working with the community is a key part to all this.
And I guess my last comment would be, you know, we spent $138,000 for the study. I mean, if it's between the, you know, fire chief and people police, that we can save, you know, additional $500,000, you know, a year on an annual basis through, you know, efficiencies, you know, that's fine. And I applaud you for that. And, you know, that worked out good. It was just my dislike of this. Well, that I think the items that were identified in the study are a small percentage of what the entire study encompassed. But I think a lot of it was issues that we're dealing with, moving control of different departments from the police department, fire department, you know, to the city, which I had a problem with, especially from the police to back to the city, because this gentleman sitting to my left here oversees the police department, and you know, I haven't really heard from you what you thought about the study, but you know, I'm sure there was some discussion prior to this, if he agreed to a lot of the issues that were brought up.
We've talked about the issues they presented back, and, okay. And you know, the police department is a department within in the city, so
right.
You know, looking for areas, there are certain areas that we need to continue to look at, because there's you know, from IA, like the city manager spoke about, there's some IA type things the chief spoke about as well, is there's some things a little bit different about the department with some safety and security. So I know some issues and from some people in the community as well that we'll continue to look at. But then the other fact too is, you know, we're from some budget type aspects with the fleet and other things, we're a department within the city, so we need to feel that we're not isolated from the city, but
right.
And working with them to see where there's opportunities for, you know,
okay.
Scale and scope, you know, depending on some of the things.
All right, Councilman Owen.
The charter works well when you have great communication between a council and the city manager and police chief. Obviously, the charter's got, you know, the quirk of the charter. We've got the fire chief under the direction of the city manager. But as council members, I think we have a right, and more importantly, I think we have an obligation to, you know, ask that the police department be good stewards of the money that every budget year that we stroke out. Chief's done a great job reducing the budget, but it's also at the same time, just through the way things go in life, it's increased. I mean, you know, a lot, just because there's more areas to patrol. We've had annexation. We're a growing community, so therefore, obviously, a budget's going to grow. You know, whatever the heck this thing identifies that you may or may not like, we still have an obligation to taxpayers to see to it. We at this council sit up here night after night after night, or at least, you know, Tuesdays, and ask the city manager to, regardless, find ways to be efficient, find ways to, you know, make good use of our time and be good stewards of our money. And so that comes down to when the police chief, whoever it is, Sam Williams, whatever, doesn't matter, and the way it's operated under 100 years, the police department comes to the city manager and says, I need X amount of dollars for this, because here's what we're going to do and do, I think we have an obligation, and to be able to ask questions and make sure that we're in good shape. And, you know, that's, and again, that's what this study identified. You know, and maybe we as council can watch our agenda items a lot closer, and if we see an efficiency study come up, by God, if we don't like it, let's read it to send it down the road. We don't have to worry about all this excitement. But, again, the ultimate goal of this is we're operationally going to be saving $500,000 a year. I commend Mr. Horse, commend the chief, and being able to look at it, Chief Gentry. You know, there's nothing wrong with looking in the mirror sometimes and being able to see, you know, areas that we can get better. So that's the whole challenge.
Anybody have anything else on this before we go to this parking study?
What about the parking fee? Because we already had a parking study, but there was a recommendation that the city and the county write tickets all over the place. Is that what you all
have heard about that?
Like, y'all write a lot, it's in here.
Yeah, no,
that's right, it is.
In the county, and the county
going to
write tickets in the city?
No, ma'am, we do the tickets, parking tickets, in the city of Ocala.
That's what I thought.
And I guess the county can come in and do it, but I don't know why they want to come in and do it.
This is not one of my...
All right, anything else, Councilman Root?
Why, did you get a ticket?
No, but you know, there's a lot of things in this study that I don't agree with.
Right.
And then there are some things, a lot, 9 out of 10 things, the police department's already doing. You know what I mean? And I just didn't see a, even though they're saving money, I guess the efficiency study was warranted. But there's a lot of things in here that seems to me just taking up paper.
Well,
I mean, it's not anything that we really needed to do that we're not already doing.
Well, not to speak for them, but I think it's pretty clear that once they took a look at our department, started talking to our people, they realized how important it was the things that we are doing, and for that to be codified. And so the public would know that, you know, the police department's out there doing a lot of things.
But he's still got a lot of recommendations in here that y'all were already doing, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That didn't need to be on this tree didn't need to be cut. That's what I'm trying to say.
Amen.
Well, I'll tell you,
timber
what.
People need to eat too. So, but let me just say one thing in there, and then Daniel will say something. I think the study was extensive, and just like all things that come in front of this council, I mean, just like Councilman Owen said, you know, we asked the city manager, you know, to be efficient and do efficient. We can take whatever we want, you know, throw some of it out, use some of it, do whatever we want. But, you know, people bring information from to us, and we do with it what, you know, we choose to do, you know, as council and mayor. This, like I said, this was extensive. It had a lot of stuff in it. I think, you know, a lot of questions were asked. Some of them, you know, are applicable. Some of them aren't. Some things, like Councilman Root said, we're doing, already doing. So we took the good stuff out of here, and, you know, we'll implement it and save $500,000. But I don't think we would have found all that out unless the study was, you know, very, very broad. So.
My response was to Ms. Rich, sometimes you got to toot your own horn when you're doing things right. And one of the things I want to see is I want to see where there's opportunities, like Councilman Owen talked about. We are stewards of the taxpayers' dollars, so we need to make sure we're doing the right things. That's what the taxpayers tell us, too. But also, I wanted to, you know, my hopes, too, with the study was to show all the good things that we are doing and help represent that to the community so they understand it's more than just a person with a badge and a car and a light and a gun, that there's a pretty detailed amount that the and from my perspective, what the police department does and the community and how they're involved and how we can continue to foster that. So, you know, I think that paperwork is telling things that we're doing are good, and I think there's a lot more that we probably didn't uncover as well that didn't come out in the study that the department does, that the men and women, are, you know.
And the guys and the employees are doing a wonderful job over there. As I said in my opening statement, in my 7 years here, we've reduced the budget every year. We've reduced the number of employees there. Those are kind of efficiencies. We've combined jobs and we put more cops on the street, took them out from behind desks and that sort of thing. So I'd like to think we're moving in that right direction. Within our plan, our response also is our strategic plan. If you'll see some of the things we've had going on there, just one example is continuing to look for efficiencies. We know that we use a lot of fuel every year because we make alcohol. I challenge my people to set a goal of reducing each officer with a car, reducing their fuel consumption by 20%. I think we've surpassed that, right there, did you? We're close to 30% in fuel savings. Those are the kinds of things that I think you should be aware of, that we are stewards of the taxpayers' dollars and trying to save and be efficient. And those are the things that I think that the study tried to capture and put in the light so that you all could be able to see it.
Okay. That's what I
was. Yeah, I was just going to say, it is refreshing. And, sir, I appreciate you and the job that you did. Kent, again, I go back to my 9 years. You've been here, what, 10 and a half? You know very well, Kent, that pre-Horst, a lot of studies we got, consultants were absolutely directed as to what they were going to present to this council.
Absolutely.
And so I absolutely applaud this man, and I applaud this city manager for us paying for a study and they swinging for the fences and saying, here's what I saw. And us being able to take that. A lot of good, a few little points that we can do, because, Kent, you know the days when we had studies when it was absolutely a manufactured process and we had zero input into it. And
absolutely.
That's why it's exciting. Like I told Mr. Dean, it's been a little time. Mr. Dean, got saw him talking about my granddad. Make a man mad, he'll work harder for you. It's an interesting statement, but glad everybody's blood gets blown around here every now and then. Makes you work harder.
Well, and that's like some of these investment reports we get, you know, on the investment committee. There'll be 37 pages, and they'll go, let's skip to the page 34. We'll give you the highlights. You know, there's a lot of stuff in this, you know, document. We took the good out of it, and we made it work.
Yep. So.
And you got all 20 pounds of it.
There you go.
Chief Williams.
Yes, sir.
Upon leaving the podium there, do you feel that this study was very efficient in its layout that was designed to deal with your morale in your department? Or let's put it this way. I'm going to ask you a question like Ms. Mary Sue did. Do you have a morale problem in your department?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. All right. Mr. City Manager, do you want to tell us about this parking center and what you want us to do with it? Or?
Sure.
I was asked to be here in case there were any charter issues involving OPD, and I know I don't know the charter all that well, but there's nothing in there about parking, so could I be excused?
Yes, you may, Mr. Gooding. Is this one?
There could be.
Actually, there is something about parking in it, but y'all need to know about it.
There we go.
Thank y'all.
Thank you, Mr. Gooding.
Council, this will only take a couple of minutes. We told you we'd get in your hands the parking study. We do have a work session scheduled in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Rich and Associates will be here to make a formal presentation on the findings, and so you have a couple of weeks to
parking garage somewhere.
Look at it. And I think this the good thing about this study is that it had a lot of good citizen and merchant input in the process.
Good.
That's it, sir.
Oh, this was the one where they kicked it off at the theater?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Okay. All right. Good. All right. If there's nothing else, we're adjourned.
Are they having a kickoff for the movie theater?
Yeah. I think you voted on. Yeah, they are. Yeah. That's what we saw them, so they can have alcohol outside the street.
So are they showing Iron Man too?
Showing Sex and the City.
We'll sign that resolution.
The chiefs are working.
What do you mean?
No.